yes, you are listening to Law and Gospel on this 2/2/2/18, February the 22nd in the year of our Lord 2018. It's obviously a Thursday, which means with us is our good friend, the Reverend Wes Reimnitz. Hi, Wes. Let me see. Why don't I have you on? Are you on now? Let's see. There you go.
Oh, you got rid of the music.
That's right. Got to get rid of the music before you come on. Don't want to interrupt the music.
Oh, boy. It's going to be one of those days, eh?
Oh, it sure is going to be. How's your millennial wife?
My millennial wife?
Oh, that's right. She wasn't born then, was she?
No, she was a baby boomer.
Yes. Millennials, 1981 to 1999, and you came across a report of surveys of congregations in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod I found really interesting about the millennials in our own denomination. What would be some items you would say are important?
Well, yeah, first of all, it was the weekend I was supposed to come down and see, the Thursday I was coming down to see, and I got called into a meeting
right.
of the circuit visitors, and they were passing it out. And it's a 2017 survey that they did. I consider it a follow-up to one that was written right around 2013, 2014, kind of an update. And it's you mentioned it earlier on a broadcast that the baptisms had made a big switch there. They went down in current years. Our children are getting baptized like they should.
Yeah, I looked at that chart. I want you to take a look. It's on page 2. In 1953. With 4 million births in the United States, we had 8,000 baptisms. But in 2013, it looks like there's also 4 million births in the United States. We only had 3,000 baptisms.
Yeah. It's I would say the birth rate, part of that is due to the fact that there's other religions involved in there. But, and the other.
Well, this is all Lutheran Church. Oh, yeah, with the birth rate, it's all religions.
Right. With the birth rate, it's all religions. With the baptisms, it's with the children, LCMS. But I think you're also looking at smaller size families.
Yes. In fact, it's unusual if families today, what's that term they use, retain the number of people. In other words, if you have a husband and a wife, to have two children means you retain the numbers. But if you have less than two, and that is a lot that's going on here, that you're not even reduplicating the number of people we already have.
Right. I think that's a good point that you bring out in that. But in looking at that, I went back and took a look at the youth gathering survey in the Terry Dittmer did one back in right around 2013, 2014.
Yeah.
Over the years there, and took a look at some of the belief systems that were there, as well as I went to Pew Research and looked at some of their research there. And there is a drop off in people bringing their kids to baptism, or themselves millennials, or the generation that brought up the millennials in bringing them to church. There's been a drop off in those areas too.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot of churches will have a number of baptized, number of confirmed, but those numbers are often much higher than in reality what is coming to church on a Sunday morning. If you have about 30 to 33%, that's about average number of people coming on a Sunday morning to church. And part of that problem is the nuns. Can you explain the nuns?
the nuns. You're not talking about the N-U-N-S, huh?
Nope.
The N-O-N-E-S.
Yes.
And that those are the ones that have kind of dropped off the off religion. If you read the Dittmer Youth Gathering report that he made, that was back in 2013, that was a real serious issue, starting to become a serious issue with the teens, that they were afraid that they were going to lose faith. And one of the concluding remarks that he made is that the rise of the nuns and would start happening.
And, yeah, a person can be a nun, he can still be a member of the congregation on the rolls, but he's just not attending anymore. And if you ask him, what denomination do you believe in? Well, I don't really belong to any. I'm a nun right now. And that can be part of the problem here. But I see another problem, and I didn't see it anywhere in the survey. But
what's
it
that?
Is my experience that a lot of parents who have children do not baptize the children within a month or so. Sometimes it's up to a year.
But, you know, that's I saw that, too. And I thought over my last 30-some years as being when I was in the parish. And, you know, I was picking up parents here and there that hadn't baptized their children.
Yes, yes. I think that's something the church and the pastor can do. You need to go through your rolls, see which individuals have had children, because we often pray for them when a child is born, thinking that they're healthy or whatever. And then I always add, looking forward to them coming to holy baptism. But I've had an experience where we have been baptizing children later in age. And a lot of times, that doesn't mean the parents are coming every Sunday. It means that they're not. And so, therefore, it's kind of hard to get the kids to come to, say, church and Sunday school if the parents aren't coming.
Yeah, I think you're really on to something when you were there talking, when you look at it from that angle, because I went back into Pew Research. And I looked at several questions that were there on religion. And one of them was when they attend church, and the other one was their belief in God. And they parallel each other in terms of percentages. If they're going to church more than once a week, with millennials,
yes,
it's about 11% of them.
Yes.
And
that's not very many.
No, but you jump to the baby boomers, and they're about 27-34%.
Yes, yes. So I can understand why you're not having those many children baptized of millennials, because they themselves aren't coming to church that often.
Yeah, well, the earlier report by Dittmer, I thought, really brought up an excellent point, that if they come from a solid family, that they themselves, as teens going into being a millennial, will be a solid millennial or a solid young adult. But if they're not going to church, if they're not in the Word, they start to fall by the wayside.
Yes. So I'm trying to figure out, what can we do to increase the number of children baptized? The first thing is do an analysis of how many children in the congregation have not yet been baptized, and make visits, particularly the pastor, maybe with an elder or so, to encourage not only attendance at church, but a baptism. That's really a very important thing.
Well, I think also is developing a relationship with the family. If they haven't been there for a while, just making the visit, I'm not so sure it's going to jog let's get to the church and get it done.
Well, the visit needs to be talking about the means of grace.
Well, yes, you have to share the Word of God with them.
That's right.
In terms of that happening, but, you know.
I heard a real interesting thing, and I'm going to be doing a sermon on it pretty soon, is that people who become nuns, and this can be any denomination, they end up self-absolving themselves. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
And the problem in self-absolving yourself, you finally get a little tired of it, and you therefore become self-righteous.
Yeah, I saw that recently at a church service where they did confession and absolution. They did a confession of sins, but what went next was the self-absolving.
Oh, really? How did that go? Do you recall?
Well, they sang a tune that said, "Change my heart, oh God."
Oh, yeah. There is so much of that nonsense in the church today. That the purpose of Christianity is for us to follow Jesus, and if we don't follow Jesus, then we're in big trouble. All of us are in big trouble, because I don't know anybody who follows Jesus perfectly.
That I would definitely agree with you. I mean, I chuckle at it, I look at it, and I go, oh boy, do we got work out there to do.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. They do have four predictors where the youth will stay in the church. The first ones, I found a real interesting one, and I think it is accurate. Being a larger congregation tends to have a higher number of young people and retain more of their confirmands in the LCMS. I am a member of St. Paul de Pere with over 2,000 members, and they do seem to have quite a few youth, a lot of youth activities. One of the other items, which I think is really important, is you have a pastor designated for the youth. Did you ever have a congregation where that was true? No, you were the one all the time.
I was, But there was truth in it. I mean, I would spend time with them in confirmation, have, you know, overnight stays with them, with adults and plan events and things like this. And yeah, they tended to gel towards the pastor. But you know, they talk about staffing is a retainer. But still, doesn't this come back to where the parents are at?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I was very fortunate at the congregation I was at for 28 years because I had two younger individuals who had children and kind of volunteered to be the adult leaders. And that was probably the best years of youth at that particular congregation because they really had a love for Christ. They were doing very well. In fact, the husband finally became a pastor of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. But be that as it may, the point I'm making is that it says if you have younger adult leaders younger than 32 years old, now I don't know why they say that particular age, but that helps with the youth.
Yeah, you should mention that. My son goes to St. Paul's Lutheran Church down there in Paducah, Kentucky.
Oh, yeah?
And he's one of those younger 32-year-olds, and he was just asked by the pastor if he would help join with revitalizing their youth group.
Yes, there is a real concern in that area. We talked last week for 3 days about evolution, which I consider to be something that's really moving people away from the church, because not only are there not pastors who can help children understand how you can still be a scientist and be against evolution, but particularly evolution gives the option that God isn't necessary in the creation of the world, and so God really isn't necessary in anything. So I think that's another area that we need to be working on more fully in helping the youth understand that evolution is really part of the devil's message, not God's message.
Right. You bring up an excellent point there, because it was brought out when we received this data, and there's more to come. that one of the number one reasons that they become nuns is they said that's the doctrine of the church. It says so, instead of sitting down and explaining to them and taking the time of answering the questions. And we need to do more of that.
Yes. And a lot of times a Bible verse isn't sufficient. But as we did last week, there is a way to talk about science that makes a Christian point of view it takes less faith to believe in 6-day, 24-hour creation than it does to take to believe in evolution.
That I would agree with you. Another point, though, that I want to get back to, you know, is we were talking about making a visit
yes.
to the family and contacting and being a part of that family. You mentioned it earlier in the week with, or yesterday, I believe it was, with Acts of Mercy.
Yes.
You know, how that can sometimes lead to someone coming to faith because you developed a relationship with them.
That's right.
And I think that's important. Even when we contact our parents about baptism and coming to church, we need to develop that relationship with them.
Yes, and through acts of mercy, for example, when we have youth rallies, a lot of times they're going into neighborhoods and helping out with rebuilding of houses or helping people get food or other kinds of things. And this opens the possibility of people asking, why are you doing this? Although I did make a strong point that we ought not be manipulative in our acts of mercy, doing that in order to say the message of Jesus Christ, but just an act of mercy in and of itself is really the life of the Christian in obedience to the second table of the law.
Right, and I've seen that where youth groups, youth organizations in our churches have gone, you know, to the elderly in the congregation and done chores, yard cleanups and various sort of chores with them, and people will ask, who are they and what are they doing, you know, and it becomes a witness to the neighborhood.
There's one statistic I had never really thought about, but if I look back in my experience, it's really quite true that you do have a lot of younger adults remain in the church if they join the church after high school.
Hmm.
Isn't that interesting? In other words, through our ministry of missions, people who've never been in the church, I'll tell you where I use these examples. I think funerals are a wonderful opportunity, first of all, to share a message during the sermon that many people who may be in the pews and are not affiliated with the church have never heard before. I mean, how many times have somebody come out and said, boy, I never heard it put that way?
It kind of reminds me, many years ago, our district, Central Illinois District, is partnering with the Latvian Lutheran Church. And when they came over and we took them around, one of them said, then communism fell and I was able to go back to a church and I heard a Lutheran church. It was like being in a stuffy room and the windows opened up and it was a breath of fresh air and stuff I'd never even heard before.
Yes.
What a difference it made in their life.
Yeah, it's kind of like taking someone, there's interesting program on television, The Best Thing I Ever Ate. And they, first of all, do it in various cities, the best thing in Memphis or New Orleans, etc. Or they'll do food, the best pizza I ever ate and this sort of thing. It's kind of like the experience that a person should have when you invite them to church and they go to a proper church where the message of the gospel is preached and the sacraments administered rightly, that you can have an aha experience.
A good sermon on law and gospel.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of people have not heard these before. And it's such a shame that legalism so often takes over, where they're saying that if you, for example, follow Jesus, then you'll have a better life and this sort of thing. Well, if that were true, Jesus wouldn't have had to die on the cross.
Or the lettuce sermon. Let us do this, let us do that.
Yep. Yeah, the lettuce or the French. You remember that one was?
What was the French one?
Mais oui.
Mais oui. Okay.
At the end of the sermon, okay, may we now follow Jesus in order to get more blessings.
What else did you find in that millennial survey?
I found, first of all, that they're not really sure. For example, the age of a pastor doesn't seem to be as important as the length of time a pastor is there. It seems that more youth stayed when a pastor was there for a longer period of time rather than just, say, 4 or 5 years and a new pastor came in. Because when a new pastor comes in, it gives the opportunity for people who are thinking about not attending the church or going elsewhere. It gives them that opportunity to do that.
You know, it reminds me of my grandfather, who had been in the ministry for 50-some years. And us grandkids watched him go over to the church basement across the parking lot and to be with the Walter League.
Yes.
We thought, man, are they ever having fun? They get to play with our grandpa, and we can't wait for the day that we get to do something like that.
Exactly. One of the things that did surprise me, some congregations are changing the confirmation process, and they were making the point there that that has little impact on retention in a congregation of the youth.
And I would agree with that. You know why?
Why?
Because the kids are so involved in sports.
Oh, boy. Yep.
We sometimes cave into, you know, we just confirm them younger and be done with it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to make. Unfortunately, some of the things that help a church retain, a church has no control over it. For example, the size of the community, or believe it or not, rural communities demonstrate a higher level of connectedness than do some suburban communities.
Right. Well, you know, and when you talk about confirmation, you've talked about this in the past that, you know, some of the memory work goes over to the parents. They've taken it over.
Yes.
Instead of us doing this, we spend more time with relational topics as we go through the catechism with the children.
Yeah, well said. So there can be some things done in how you do confirmation, but that one I particularly like because you get the parents involved in the confirmation instruction, and they're being reminded also. Remember, what does Luther say at the front of the small catechism?
Oh, yeah. The head of the household should teach.
That's right. This is the way the head of the household should be teaching. And he indicates that this ought to be something done every day with the children, like a repeating of the commandments or the Lord's Prayer or the meaning of baptism, the Lord's Supper, and so forth, and specifically the creed. So,
right. But, you know, also with in that area, I know pastors with their confirmation are spending much greater time, as you talked about earlier, about the means of grace and how it touches their life with baptism, Lord's Supper, attending church, being in the Word, and how they relate with the pastor, the parents, and the church, and things of that nature.
Issues, etc. Yesterday had an excellent segment where they were going over the book of Judges, and the point was made that the reason so many in Israel fell from the faith is they forgot what God had done for them, and they weren't being taught that at all. So confirmation is a remembrance.
And therein lies, too, what we were talking about on a couple of these surveys. When they start falling away from regular attendance of church, they start falling away from their regular devotional life and
exactly.
Being the Word.
All right. Thank you very much, Pastor Reimnitz. We'll be back next week. Tomorrow, though, is an open mic Friday. We'll be glad to take any questions on this. God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel each weekday at this time on Worldwide KFUO. For a contribution to the program, make your check payable to Law and Gospel and mail it to Pastor Tom Baker, Post Office Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri 63132. You can call toll-free at 1-877-267-1962 or email Law and Gospel at lawandgospel101.com. Views and opinions expressed on Worldwide KFUO may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. If you'd like to comment on programs or topics heard on Worldwide KFUO, write us at KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can also leave a question or comment on our comment line at 314-996-1542. We are the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.